Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Kate Simpson, co-author of Take Two, A Journal for New Beginnings. Today we're going to discuss building resilience at work, specifically how the Take Two Journal came about, its creation, and how it can assist listeners in building resilience within the workplace. Kate, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show today.
Tony, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
We're recording today. It's June 23rd, and the Building Resilience, your Take Two Journal, doesn't come out until July 28th. So I'm very much looking forward to receiving my copy and starting the process of building resiliency, specifically in the work environment. But my understanding is that the journal isn't just for work or based off of work, but it's more of a building resilience throughout life. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's interesting to think about, actually, you know, resilience at work is actually not that different than resilience in your day-to-day life. There's a lot of similarities and overlap. If you think about the definition of resilience, it's really the ability to face whatever life throws at you with a little bit more agility. And so, you know, we're thrown things at work, in relationships, in stress and challenges in the same way that we are in our personal lives. So there's actually really a lot of overlap in developing those skills.
I am so excited that you defined what resiliency is, because I think it is an emotional strength that maybe is overlooked a lot. Generally, I think when we talk about, you know, overcoming fear, or overcoming anxiety, those are the ones we hear a lot about. But what we don't hear about is how to build something. I mean, we don't overcome resilience because it's something that we want. We talk more about the things that we have to overcome or deal with, as opposed to the personality traits that we have to build up. Tell me how you came about recognizing that there was a need for a journal like this, or how you came about kind of discovering the need to build your own resilience.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, because sort of like you, I thought resilience was something that you were born with as like a character trait. And when I was going through some of my own sort of personal challenges, I realized as I started researching resilience that it's actually a skill that you develop. So I started reading a lot about this concept of neuroplasticity, which is basically that our brains are a little bit more malleable than certainly I ever understood. And you can actually deepen neural grooves that lead to greater resiliency and consequently sort of greater contentment in your life. So when I was dealing with my own personal challenge in my life and then really trying to help support my kids and help them develop resilience, I realized that there wasn't really anything out there in the market that was something that I could use on a daily basis that very concretely gave me the opportunity to practice some of these tools that they now know based on current neuroscience lead to greater resilience. You know, I would sort of read one in one big book and then another great idea in another book. But when you're dealing with an actual difficult situation, whether it be at work or in your personal life, you just usually don't have the bandwidth to read a 300-page book and actually walk away with something that you can use day to day. So this was really originated from really my own wanting of something that I could keep on my nightstand that I could pick up that would just be a reminder of what some of these science-based tools are that could help me sort of work on it as a practice every day.
Now, your background, so prior to co-authoring Take Two, A Journal for New Beginnings, your background wasn't in neuroplasticity or even psychology or book writing, correct?
Correct. Yes, that's right. I do have a master's from Stanford, from the School of Education. And I actually, as my undergraduate degree, was a trained English teacher. And so there was a little bit of a part of me that, you know, liked research and would be the one to pick up one of those long books and really make my way through and try to gather and glean whatever I could from them. But I actually, in my sort of day-to-day job, work for an organization that helps support investors aligning their investment portfolios with their personal values. So not similar at all, actually.
No, I actually think that's really, really great, though. But it shows kind of knowing and understanding your background and who you are, I think gives readers and listeners an understanding as to where this comes from. So take two. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have this educational background and you're faced with a life event that forces you to educate yourself on building is personality trait too strong of a word, or is that really what we're talking about here? Kind of building
up personality. Yeah, you know, I actually, it's a little bit, the way that I've sort of understood resilience is, you know, it could become a personality trait if you actually practice it enough. But I actually really look at these tools and these practices. I equate them in my mind to exercise, where you can, you know, you can read about exercise and you can be an expert in all the different types of exercise, but you don't get the benefits if you don't actually practice it every day. And so I sort of equate a lot of this work to, you know, using that exercise analogy. You have to train your brain to actually develop these skills.
I think that's a really cool way to look at it. So you experience a life event in which you recognize that this muscle needs to be toned and worked in order to build the strength. Now, how do you realize you've got these piles of books, and I can definitely equate to having multiple piles of books everywhere throughout my home. And reading through and not getting through the whole thing and then saying, oh, I wish there was crib notes on this.
Yeah.
So does take two kind of do that, provide the, I don't want to say crib notes, but easily digestible tools in which you can be exercising muscles on a daily basis?
Yeah. I mean, it's really designed for that. So I had two friends who I had met here in my town who also were sort of going through their own personal challenges. And one is an amazing photographer, Carrie Herrer, and another is a really beautiful writer, Ellen Watson. And so the three of us sort of all were diving into this research and spent a lot of time thinking about how can we make this something that we could use every single day. And so the journal is actually broken into four different sections that are sort of loosely based on the seasons. And so we sort of use the seasons as a metaphor for the different stages of a transition that you go through. It could be a minor life issue that you're dealing with or just a story that you're telling yourself. So say if it's like a worse workplace environment, it could be your boss who you're not getting along with or a coworker. And it's just something that you need to work through and really like reflect on that story that you're ruminating on, or it could be a major life event, because actually these skills apply to the day-to-day as much as they do the big picture problems. So we designed it loosely based on the seasons as sort of a metaphor for the stages of a transition. And so the first section is we use the metaphor of fall, which is really sort of more dealing with the immediacy of a crisis or a story. You know, here in New England, more sort of naturally, you go more inward with the darkness of the season. And that is developing more internal reflection skills. And then it moves into spring, where you're sort of stepping back out of your, you know, sort of inner world into, you know, sort of asking yourself the question, like, what seeds do I want to plant in my life? And how can I actually use some of these tools to get there? And then the final section is summer, where you're actually reconnecting with people and then really using like a very specific practice to try to connect with people in ways that bring you the greatest chance of sort of contentment.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today we're talking to Kate Simpson, co-author of Take Two, a journal for new beginnings. And we're discussing specifically building resilience at work. And Kate just described the way that the journal is set up and different ways in which it can help users through, I think crisis is the best way to describe it. Now, Kate, is it set up for dealing with kind of one crisis at a time, or can it be building resilience through multiple different circumstances or issues that individuals may be facing on a daily basis?
That is a great question, because I have found myself going to the journal for a number of different day-to-day things, as well as like bigger things. I mean, I sort of think of our lives as a spiral that sort of ideally is like spiraling upward, but you always have that part of the spiral that goes back down. And so it's really the journal helps you when you're in a little bit of that trough of whatever it is that you're facing. You know, I was saying if it's a workplace situation, and, you know, we'll talk more about the specifics of each section, but it really offers you the ability to guide you into a reflective process so that you can really start to look at what's actually going on internally. Because if you don't actually recognize what's going on in your own internal process, you really have no opportunity to change anything. You need to actually reflect on how you're reacting. And to be able to actually create change, you have to actually change that internal process or at least recognize what's going on. And so you really can apply it to any different situation. And what's, I think, unique about the journal is that all of the tools that we included have current neuroscience behind them. So every single part section that we include and prompt that we have has science behind how using that power of neuroplasticity actually rewires your brain to be slightly more, you know, I don't really like the word happy. I think content probably is the right word, because we in our culture have, you know, happiness is like instant gratification. And that's not really what this leads to. It really leads to like just a general sense of contentment.
In creation of the journal itself, I think what a lot of listeners probably are saying, and I definitely know it's run through my mind, is I don't have time. I don't have time for another journal or meditative exercise or mindfulness. I mean, I keep hearing all this stuff about mindfulness. Isn't this just another form of mindfulness? Like, how would you respond to individuals who may be responding in that way to kind of the things that you're discussing right now?
Yeah, that is such a great question, because I feel the same way. Do I have time for this? And so, again, I think the analogy of exercise is really important, because, you know, we all understand that if we don't take the time to exercise, we know that long term, we're not going to feel as well. And so it's really very similar to this. We actually created an online course that is a guide to using the journal. And we specifically crafted it so that it's 10 minutes a day, because I think everybody can find 10 minutes, you know, if it's at the end of the day before you go to bed, if it's 10 minutes at your lunch break, where you can commit to sort of a long-term feeling better just with 10 minutes of work. And there's so much research about, I mean, we can talk about some of the specific tools that we include, but one of them is, say, a gratitude practice. And so in the journal, we actually include a space for you to include 21 days of gratitude, because there are measurable changes in our brain that happen if we practice gratitude for 21 days. And so you think about like 10 minutes a day, only 21 days, changes in your brain, sort of in the same way like exercise helps us feel better. I think it makes it a lot easier and more digestible to say, okay, yeah, I can do 10 minutes a day, because I know that the long-term benefits are there.
I love hearing that, actually. And as you were saying, 10 minutes a day, all I could think of in my mind is the Sunday, I don't want to call it a warning, but the Sunday alert that I get every week that says, your screen time on your phone is up 20% over last week. And then seeing how many hours a day I spend on my phone and thinking to myself, okay, it's tough to talk about your lack of time when you're actually spending that much time using your phone. So if you cut out X, Y, and Z minutes of social media or news time or those other things, what could you replace that time with? And I think by saying 10 minutes, this isn't me putting aside 2 hours every day to focus on myself, but is really a manageable time frame.
Mm-hmm. And I think especially for people in a workplace environment where, I mean, if you're a manager and you are really trying to improve your workplace productivity or, say, your workplace culture, the work really starts with you. And so I often think, you know, maybe you won't take 10 minutes for yourself, but if you think, if I do this work 10 minutes a day and it actually improves the outcomes, you know, there's a lot of research about improved workplace productivity related to workplace culture. People feel safe. If they feel like they can trust their manager, then they're more willing to take risk and then they're more willing to innovate. I mean, there's a lot of research. I think Google did a lot of really innovative, cutting-edge research about that, researching their managerial teams or their worker teams. And so, you know, if that may be the hook, like if a person who's like, okay, I can't do this for myself, but you know what? I actually really do want to improve my workplace environment because I want to improve my, you know, output, then I think that maybe is enough of a hook. But then that person would then see the benefits throughout their entire life.
And I think that one of the really cool aspects, and I love how you've just described that, is think about how much time we spend solving interpersonal issues in the work environment that may be based in part on general resilience or lack thereof. And if we could focus that time and energy into providing ourselves and our team with the skills to be able to be resilient enough to deal with those issues or bumps in the road, then you are decreasing the time that you're being reactionary to those issues. So I think that's a really great point mm-hmm. when we talk about how we spend time.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, your host. And I'm talking to Kate Simpson, co-author of Take Two, a journal for new beginnings. Today, we're discussing building resilience at work. And before the break, Kate and I were talking a lot about both making time for journaling and how this is different from more general mindfulness training or exercises. And the journal itself is set up into, it sounds like, four distinct parts. And I say sounds like because the journal doesn't come out till the 28th, and individuals can pre-order that now from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Chronicle Books, and Indie Books, correct?
Correct. That's right.
And they can find the journal at take2journal.com or on social media by searching for Take Two, a journal for new beginnings. But the way it's set up is into seasons, as you've described it. So I'd love to jump in and get an understanding as to how that works in the process. And you noted earlier that we start in autumn, in the fall. Mm-hmm. Tell me how the idea came about to separate it into seasonal discussion, and then what is occurring when we are in the fall stage or the autumn stage of building resilience?
Choosing the seasons as sort of a metaphor for these different stages of dealing with a difficult situation. You know, living in New England, you know, we're just sort of a little more in touch with the seasons, and there is a natural flow to that cycle that really fits with this process. So that fall section is really all of the seasons are designed to first help people recognize and reflect on the stories that they're telling themselves about whatever the situation is, moving into winter, which is then taking it a step further and actually starting to work with those thoughts that you've now sort of recognized that you're having. So that first section is really that first step into saying that the tool of the season is actually journaling. And so there's a lot of research, neuroscience research, about the benefits of journaling, especially when you start identifying the emotions that are experienced in a story that you're journaling about. So the journal actually starts to guide you through that process of first writing about the story that brings you to the journal. So that could be anything. It could be a workplace situation to something you're dealing with your kids, a partner. It really could be anything. I mean, I think every day we all have lots of stories that we're telling ourselves about that we sort of struggle with or ruminate on. So it's really like beginning by starting to reflect on that story by writing about it. And then it specifically guides you to identifying the emotions that you experience in that story. And so that's actually where the research really shows it helps you feel better, because you're starting to create a little bit of space between the emotion that you're experiencing and the story. And that's really where the benefits happen. And then we have an online course that I mentioned before that then has some guided meditations that help you even take it a step further that you can't just in a written journal. But we have you label the journal, we have you label the emotions and really write about sort of where you experience them in your body. And so it guides you through that. So at the end of it, the real benefit is from creating a little bit of perspective on the story. So ideally, a person writes about the story, they start to separate the emotions they're experiencing in it. And once they have a little bit of that space, you very often see the story a little bit differently. You have a little bit of perspective on it. And that is incredibly powerful for people in helping them sort of feel better.
So it's interesting, because as you're describing this whole process, I hear in my mind, like as we're discussing autumn, this concept or idea of I'm really good at giving advice and I'm not good at taking my own advice. Is that in a nutshell what we're talking about? Is this inability to either, I don't want to say identify our own weaknesses, but identify being unable to identify or find a way or a solution around kind of whatever the challenge is that we're facing in that moment?
Yeah, it is really hard to do. Again, it's a little bit of that exercise sort of analogy where it's a muscle we have to train to be able to reflect and notice that we're telling ourselves these stories. I think you're right. It's so easy to give other people advice. It's really hard to take the time to actually really reflect on the story. So a story would be like, so say your boss is mistreating you. You think your boss is mistreating you. Well, that's actually a story it may actually be factually true, but it may actually just be a story. Your boss said something to you that you then interpreted, in a way that then you're like, oh, my boss doesn't think I'm competent. And so it triggers this whole probably list of stories that you've maybe heard in your, probably some sort of a childhood story that you are then also now hearing from your boss. And so really taking the time to actually question that story, is that true that that's how my boss talked to me? Or could it possibly be, this is actually just my interpretation of it? Then once you have sort of created that space, you then have the opportunity to choose to respond differently to it. So if you're, just to continue this sort of metaphor of the boss, if your boss is talking to you and says something that you interpret as rude or dismissive or demeaning, and then you respond from a place, a reaction to that where you're like, I'm not going to do what he says, or I'm going to, not work as hard. And so the consequences of your reaction are actually pretty profound. Maybe you get passed up for the next job opportunity because it's this whole chain reaction of just you responding to that one situation with your boss. And maybe that is the right response, that the response you want to have, but just the building in a process for being able to reflect on, is that the right response? Like, let me just question that for a minute. Could he have been saying that to me, rudely, or was he just really rushed? changed? Or are there other possibilities in that situation? And so let me think really consciously about how I actually want to react to that situation before it takes me down this whole other path that maybe I don't actually really want to go on. Maybe it's not really taking me where I want to go. So it's really just building in consciousness to how we respond to things.
So you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today we're talking to Kate Simpson, co-author of Take Two, A Journal for New Beginnings. And we're discussing building resilience at work, and we're currently going through each of the different almost sections of the journal itself, and we're talking a lot about the narrative, taking whatever difficult situation you're faced with, and we're focusing on difficult situations at work, but this is a journal that someone could use in their personal life as they're going through issues with family or relationships or anything in which resilience would be helpful, and understanding kind of how we can become more resilient in all aspects, both in the situation but in other aspects of our life. Kate, the way you've just described the autumn aspect of the book, it sounds like it's acknowledging what your narrative is and then understanding or recognizing that the narrative of others could be different, that you're looking mm-hmm. through it with your own lens, your own life experiences. When I say experiences, I would say good experience, traumatic experiences, all of those things are playing a role in the narrative that you create. Is that what we're looking at in that autumn time frame?
Yeah, I mean, that is really well summarized. And it really is the undercurrent theme of the entire journal. That first section is really the first step in that by just writing your story and then being able to create a little bit of space. And then the winter section actually even takes it a little bit deeper. And so each section takes it slightly deeper in that same process of recognizing our own thoughts and what's happening in our own mind. There's a professor from UCLA, his name is Dan Siegel, and he wrote this concept called mindsight. And mindsight is really what we're talking about, which is creating space to recognize what is actually happening internally in us. Because it's only when we create space and that recognition and reflection that we actually have the opportunity to change our reaction to it. And so then the winter section, there are three specific tools that we, again, have a lot of neuroscience behind them that we bring into to take it one step further in our own ability to reflect on what's happening inside of us. And so the first one is mindfulness. And that is really, again, training our mind to recognize and create space before we react. So you have a situation that you're confronted with, and mindfulness, a mindfulness practice, and you know we go into much more detail in the journal, is really training our brain to not react. So a mindfulness practice is really just learning and training your mind to not think. You know, a lot of times people focus on their breath, say, in a mindfulness practice. The reason for doing that is it takes us out of our thoughts and is training our mind to create space. So there's a professor, she's a psychologist at Harvard Medical School, her name's Susan David, and she coined this term linguistic space. So really this mindfulness does is it creates the opportunity for us to create linguistic space. So space between what we're hearing and how we're reacting. And if you think about like, especially in the workplace, but even any relationship in our life, that is so key to have that pause before we react to think about like, okay, what is my goal with this situation? So if you have a manager, say, working with an employee and they do something wrong, if that manager can take a pause and think, okay, really my goal is to create an environment of, you know, a trust where this employee is able to feel safe to take risk because we're working on a project and we don't know how to solve the project. I want somebody to feel safe enough to come up with creative ways to solve this problem that we're trying to solve. If I respond really harshly in that moment, that employee is not going to trust me. It is completely compromising the culture of trust. And so if you have that manager is able to just say, my long-term goal, create a culture of trust, I need this person to be able to know that I'm not going to respond harshly to something when they do something wrong, it can really transform an entire workplace if you had every person in the workforce, especially managers, you know, really trained to think about taking that linguistic space before they react.
Kate, it's really interesting because when you talk about linguistic space, my mind as an employment law litigator goes immediately to the idea or concepts that we use when we are prepping someone for a deposition. And when we're prepping someone, we're not, you know, talking about the answers to the questions that they're going to get or that kind of stuff, but really just focusing on things that people need to remember that they do on a daily basis, but maybe actively aren't doing. And during the course of a deposition, when it's higher stress, that they'll need to exercise a lot more. And specifically, that's when a question is asked, take 3 or 4 seconds and go through and think to yourself, take a breath, say, do I understand what the person's asking me? Do I know where my answer starts and where my answer ends? And truly use some of those active listening techniques. And it sounds like that's kind of what linguistic space is and what's occurring when we're going through at least some of those initial steps when we're in the winter chapters of the journal. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is 100% in my mind the goal of a mindfulness practice, is to be able to get to that place where you can create and train yourself to just pause. There's a really interesting communication practice that I don't know if you've ever come across called NVC, nonviolent communication, has kind of a weird name, but they are very interested in the same thing, the skills that you're talking about, active listening, and really training people with a mindfulness practice to create that pause and not just respond out of, you know, what they call reactivity. There's a really interesting concept that, I don't know if you remember Joseph Campbell, who, well, he's written a number of books, but he has this really interesting concept that a lot of teachers talk about where it's sort of this line, and it's this line of consciousness, and then sort of below the line is responding from non-consciousness, which is really just reactivity. And so it's really like, what are the practices that you can use in your day-to-day life that bring you above the line? It takes awareness to remember to pause. Like even just that, remembering to pause, is a lot of training has to go into reminding yourself to do that when you're in the heat of a moment.
And I think that oftentimes as managers, the expectation and the expectation now as the emails are popping up and your phone is next to you and calls are coming in and decisions need to be made is that those seconds cost money, and recognizing that they do, but if you take the seconds necessary to really think about it, you're going to be saving a lot more money in the long run, or in the end, I guess, is a really good way to describe it.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. I think that is really, really important to think about, not to be a little bit more sort of take the longer view than the sort of short-sighted, I just need to respond right now. I just need to be as efficient as possible, but actually taking the longer view of, okay, but if I react, what are the consequences to me reacting in a way that doesn't actually lead me where I want to go, which might be I actually need to have a good working relationship with this person. The long-term consequences of damaging that trust in that relationship are much greater.
That's such an important point. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Barrel-Law.com. Our guest today is Kate Simpson, author of Take Two, A Journal for New Beginnings. And we've spent today's episode discussing how the journal is set up and the importance of resilience in the workplace. And before the break, we were talking about the importance of taking time before we react. And even though our culture currently is one that seems to or preaches kind of fast decisions and access to information, that there is a lot of importance in creating linguistic space. And we were talking about the journal and it being set up from a seasonal basis. We were talking about the winter season and specifically mindfulness as one of the tactics that are used as we're kind of digesting and pulling apart different incidences or events in which we are trying to build resilience around. And you mentioned that there were two other tactics or kind of tools that are set forth in that winter season. What are those, Kate?
Yeah, so the first one is self-compassion. There is a lot of research. A professor, I believe she's at the University of Texas, her name is Kristen Neff, who has done some really incredible research on the power of practicing compassion towards ourselves. Because really, if we can't find compassion for ourselves and our own stories, we really don't have the chance of practicing it towards others. So that next tool that we offer are some prompts. And then in the online course, we have a guided meditation that helps people start to touch on offering ourselves compassion, which is actually a lot more difficult for some people than you might think. Like you can, it's very easy to offer, you know, to say like to a friend, oh, you know, I'm sorry you're going through that. But it's actually much, much harder for us to actually really touch in on, gosh, I really wish I hadn't responded that way. I mean, so often we get caught up in stories of regret or, you know, sort of victimhood. And offering ourselves compassion is really a pathway out of that.
You know, it's a really good point. And oftentimes when you're saying that, I keep thinking of my mother's voice in my head saying, you know, how important this is this? Like, isn't your health more important or isn't, you know, it explains the thing that's more important. And one of the best ways to, I think, describe some of the things that you've just said was this concept that someone shared with me probably about, and it's interesting, 5 years ago, where it was this 5-5-5 concept. Will this matter or will this cause you the same level of stress and anxiety in 5 hours, 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months, 5 years. And when you look at the stress that I feel like so many people carry around or these feelings of failure that we all internalize, in that moment, it feels like it is the worst thing that could ever happen. But if you're thinking about the stresses that you had 5 months ago, I bet there's only a handful of them that listeners or readers could identify.
That is so true. It's much harder than you think. One of the prompts that we have is to write a letter, a compassionate letter to ourselves, just as we would offer it to a friend, we would offer it to ourselves. But that actually can be really difficult for people. So we prompt them to actually envision themselves as like an older, all-loving, compassionate person. Or if that doesn't work, think of themselves as like a small child and then writing a letter to themselves, a compassionate letter to themselves, envisioning them as a younger person. And that allows them to really touch into and offer themselves things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to.
I absolutely love that. That sounds so great. So we know in winter, we've got mindfulness, we've got self-compassion. And what's the third element of the winter?
So the third one is gratitude. There's so much research about gratitude practice, which I think has actually become pretty mainstream. I feel like I see it everywhere. But the research that I saw that was really interesting is it's not the benefits to our brain. So like the neuroscience research shows it's not actually as effective when we just say, I am so grateful for my house. It's actually, I mean, although you might be grateful for your house, it's actually holding on to the small moments in our lives that allow us to just bring small moments of happiness. So it might be like the warmth of your cup of coffee in the morning or the smell, and then they prompt you, the research shows, to stay with that feeling for 10 to 15 seconds. And so that's what we encourage people to do in the journal, because that's actually rewiring the brain and creating a new, more positive neural groove. There's a professor from UC Berkeley, Rick Hansen, who has written a book called Hardwired for Happiness that really goes into depth in this. So we really drew from his research in building this into this section of the journal.
Oh, I love it. I think that sounds so great. So we work through the mindfulness, the self-compassion, the gratitude in winter, and we find ourselves in the spring, in the season, I always say, of rebirth. What are we focusing on once we reach the spring section of the journal?
Yeah, so this is a section that really prompts us to think of what sort of metaphorical seeds do we want to create in our life? And the only way to really be able to kind of grow those seeds is to recognize what our mindset is and how our mindset could be limiting us in thinking about what we actually want in our lives. So here we really drew on some research from Carol Dweck and a professor at Stanford. Her name is Alia Crum. And they were doing some really powerful research around how our mindset, not only does it impact what our thoughts are, but our bodies actually believe what we're thinking. So like the chemicals in our body change based on what that thought is. I mean, that's how powerful it is. And so what we do is we guide people through starting to understand the concept of mindset, but really thinking about limiting beliefs and identifying the limiting beliefs that could be holding them back that are directly tied to their mindset. So if your mindset is, you know, I'm not, you know, smart enough, or I could never achieve whatever it is. I mean, if you're thinking about a workplace environment, I could never reach that position. It could probably tie it even into like imposter syndrome, you know, sort of like I'm not good enough to be, you know, actually doing whatever this opportunity is that's presented to me. Well, that's actually a limiting belief. And unless you actually recognize it as a limiting belief, you actually cannot change it. So again, it's sort of drawing on the skills that you developed in winter of recognizing your thought and recognizing that you're having this limiting belief. And then we guide people into turning it into a positive affirmation, because again, that's deepening new thought patterns in our brains. And so we turn that I'm not good enough into a positive affirmation of I am good enough. And if you repeat that and you notice, that's my story of my not good enough story. Oh, I'm having it again. Okay, I need to switch and force myself to think, you know what? I actually can do this. And then that starts to impact your mindset and opens up a whole new set of opportunities for yourself.
So you're almost creating a placebo for yourself. So you've identified this
exactly
issue.
Right.
Or challenge, and then you create whatever your placebo is going to be that will lead you to believe and to change whatever the dynamic is. And I've seen and I've read some really interesting research just kind of about that thought or concept that, like, if you believe, whatever the oil or tincture or whatever it is that you're using is going to help, that you will feel. You will feel better in some ways, but that's the mindfulness practice, I guess, of just believing that you can change and be better.
Yeah. And I had read that about medical studies of placebo. So I sort of understood that concept, but I had never really thought about it in terms of how it impacts our life. So in our choices that we're making, that our bodies believe what we're thinking, no matter what it is. So if like you're saying, the tincture, if you think it's going to, you know, heal you, it will sometimes if you really believe it. But also, if I really believe that I can't do X, Y, or Z, you're right. My body is actually believing that. And then how does that impact? Like, how does that lead, you know, stress hormones sort of being dumped into our system, which then leads to like chronic health issues. I mean, it's this whole cascade of consequences just from believing that thought.
Absolutely. It was great to hear about spring. We are going to take a quick break, but when we return, I want to kind of wrap up and learn more about summer. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and we're talking to Kate Simpson, author of Take Two, a journal for new beginnings. And we've been discussing building resilience at work and specifically how the journal itself will help individuals to kind of create that resiliency in the work environment. And the journal set up into a seasonal discussion, and we've spent the last few segments talking about autumn and identifying kind of what the issue is, and then winter and understanding ways to build resilience, and then spring, and really specifically working on ways in which we can build ourselves up and help to create some of that resilience. Kate, let's talk a little bit about summer and those final chapters of the journal and what we're working towards in those chapters.
Yeah. So the last section of the journal is the summer. So if you think about sort of the natural stages of the seasons, it's the one after spring where you're suddenly coming back out into the world and interacting with the people in your life. Maybe in a way, having done all this other work in a way that is slightly different than maybe it was before, especially if you've been through a transition. So the tool, the sort of science-based tool that we offer in summer is compassion. And there is an incredible amount of research about the benefits to ourselves when we offer others compassion. And so it begins with finding compassion for strangers, which is relatively easy. And then to the person working at the grocery store or somebody you're passing on the street, and really thinking, the prompts sort of guide you to thinking about what challenges could they be thinking and facing. And then it guides you to offering compassion for people sort of in your inner world, which sometimes can get a little bit harder depending on, your own relationships. But finally, the last one is finding compassion for somebody who has hurt you, which is probably the most difficult prompt in the whole journal, but probably has the biggest benefits of all the prompts in the journal, because really it's a form of forgiveness. And it's not forgiveness for them. Who cares about them? Maybe they are a jerk and they treated you really badly. They shouldn't be in your life and you shouldn't welcome them back. But finding peace in that story for you has incredible benefits. I mean, most people have read about the long-term consequences of stress and anxiety. Those kinds of, when you hold anger for somebody, you're actually creating a lot of stress for yourself. And so there's a really beautiful poem that we include that I think is my favorite one by a poet named Miller Williams. And the last line of it is, "We don't know what wars are being fought down where the spirit meets the bone." So it's really approaching this person who maybe has hurt you with the ability to say, you know what, I actually don't know what their life experiences were. Maybe they were abused as a child. Maybe they're, whatever the story, for somebody to hurt somebody else, they are not a happy person and they're suffering. And so really acknowledging their suffering and that, no, it's not okay that they hurt you, but just understanding that they were just reacting from their own set of life experiences and finding peace for yourself in it. So that is probably the most powerful of all of the prompts in the journal and the hardest.
I was going to say, I can understand why we left that until the end, because yeah. I think if we started the journal from a place in which we needed to find that compassion for somebody who has harmed us or hurt us tremendously, it would be one of those things where I know I specifically, and I'm guessing many of our listeners would say, that's it, I'm out. So I can understand why the process is so lengthy to get to a point in which you feel that it's possible for you to respond that way. But I think that's great. Kate, we have quite time for one more question. It's one that that's been kind of at top of mind for me. And that is, during the course of this experience, what have you learned most about yourself through this journal?
As I've mentioned a few times, we created an online course that really guides you through using the journal. So, I mean, the text is the journal, and we just sort of handhold and include some more additional guided meditations. And I was unwilling to release that out into the world until I did it myself. So I just about a month and a half ago went through the entire journal start to finish on this. It's a 28-day guide to using the journal. The other co-author and I did it. And it was really interesting because I feel like I know a lot of this. And yet when I dig in, I'm like, oh gosh, I still have a lot of work to do. But that's sort of the point. There's no there. It's always a cycle, a spiral that you're working through. And maybe you're not going as deep, but there's always work to do because it is a practice. And so I think for me, the thing that surprised me the most was really in that spring section, as I was working through, I felt like I really had a handle on all the limiting beliefs that I had because I had spent time working on that before. And yet when I went through that section in this course, I could not believe the limiting beliefs that were still cropping up, even just around creating this journal. I mean, you know, who am I to like create this, you know, write this? I mean, yes, I can research and yes, I can do this, but the deep belief is like, who am I to do this? And so that just kept coming up again and again, despite all of the work that I had already done. To me, it sort of was like, oh, great, this actually is working. If this is still uncovering these limiting beliefs, there's real power in it because you can just continue to use it over and over.
Kate, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the journal.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, I'm Richard Moon from Verrill. This week's Tip of the Week is, you should review now your policy on sick leave. Most companies have their own policies dealing with sick leave, and you want to be sure it meets the current needs of your business in this time of the pandemic. How does it fit with the Family First Coronavirus Response Act, with the federal or state FMLA acts, and how do you recall people from leave? You want to be sure that you have addressed the issues in a way that allows you to be flexible enough to put people out on leave when you, in your discretion, think it's in their interest and the business interest, even if it's not legally required.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.